yellow woman dies in a one vehicle rollover. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you how Montana's Veterans Affairs system compares to other VA facilities around the country. And on Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program, news director Sally Mock talks with Lee newspaper reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison about the latest campaign ads featuring women who have been victims of violence. A 79-year-old Helena woman has died of injuries she suffered in a rollover crash as she tried to exit Interstate 15 in Helena. Montana Highway Patrol Trooper Brandon Ull tells KTVH-TV that Donna J. Hanna was northbound at about 7:15 p.m. when she took the Custer Avenue exit too late and hit a reflective post. She overcorrected to her left and the vehicle went into the grass and overturned. Hanna was ejected. Ull says Hanna died of internal injuries at St. Peter's Hospital early this morning after a four-hour surgery.
And in other news from around the state, in a recent review, the Department of Veteran Affairs Montana healthcare system ranked high in patient satisfaction, but came near the bottom for patient wait times and employee satisfaction. The Missoulian reports in a March review by the VA Inspector General, VA Montana scored 51st in patient satisfaction out of 128 facilities. However, the report ranked Montana VA in the bottom eight in wait times for specialty care, primary care, and mental health treatment. The system was ranked in the bottom three in employee satisfaction. VA Montana Congressional Liaison Gail Wickerson said the system is taking steps to address the deficiencies, but is awaiting results from a national audit to address wait times. VA Montana saw over 30,000 unique visitors during the last fiscal year, with almost 194,000 outpatient visits.
Yellowstone County officials say it appears a mother and daughter who were found dead in their home died of carbon monoxide poisoning. Coroner Bill Jones says they are awaiting results of blood tests, but Police Captain John Bedford says carbon monoxide levels in the house were extremely high when the bodies were found Wednesday. The victims were identified yesterday as 33-year-old Jessica Hicks and 14-year-old Alexis Nicholson. Bedford says carbon monoxide appears to have come from an on-demand hot water heater that was improperly vented into the crawl space instead of outside. The unit turned on when Hicks ran water for a shower. Officers say her body was found in the bathroom, while Alexis collapsed at the top of the stairs coming up from the basement. Assistant Coroner Chad Fair says the family dog also died.
A federal jury has convicted a consultant for the Blackfeet Indian Tribe on more than two dozen charges in a scheme to defraud a $9.3 million mental health program. U.S. District Judge Brian Morrison set a September 4th sentencing for Gary County. County was found guilty yesterday of 21 counts of fraud along with false claims, theft of federal property, theft of a tribe, money laundering, and conspiracy to defraud the government. County was convicted of bankruptcy fraud during the first trial in March, but jurors couldn't reach a verdict on the other fraud charges. Prosecutors said the retired Oklahoma State University professor kicked back more than $230,000 from a federally funded project to accounts controlled by the program's leaders. County's attorney said the tribal leaders perpetuated the fraud.
The latest Federal Election Commission fundraising reports show two Republican candidates for the U.S. House seat have made large personal loans to their campaign coffers. State Senator Matt Rosendale of Glendive has made a $500,000 loan to his campaign, bringing his personal campaign loan total to $1 million, while former State Senator Corey Stapleton of Billings loaned $200,000 to his campaign. It is his first campaign loan. Both candidates made the loans between April 1st and May 14th. State Senator Ryan Zinke of Whitefish still leads the Republican candidates in campaign fundraising with a total of $1.2 million. He has not made loans to his campaign. Rosendale, Stapleton, Zinke, Senator Elsie Arntzen of Billings, and Drew Turiano of Helena are seeking the Republican nomination for the U.S. House seat being vacated by Republican Representative Steve Daines.
The final push to light two Missoula pedestrian bridges is underway, with supporters hoping to raise the remaining $25,000 needed to begin the project. Both the Missoula City Council and County Commission have approved the plan to light the Madison Street Walking Bridge and the Van Buren Street Footbridge on the University of Montana's north end. Non-blinking, high-efficiency white LEDs would be used. Light Our Bridges Missoula committee member Jeff Badenoch describes this idea was originally developed.
A couple of years ago, some Missoula citizens were traveling in Europe, and they saw bridges, I believe it was in Portugal, that were illuminated at night. And it struck them as being something that was very beautiful, and because we are a city of bridges, they said, why don't we do that in Missoula? And that's what started the idea.
Badenoch says the lighting would be both subtle and elegant.
Light against dark is something that people have always been fascinated with and always appreciated. And in the case of bridges, bridges have an architectural and an engineering design component to them that is, it's lovely to behold. And so at night, when all the other aspects of the city might be muted by darkness, we'll see those engineered and architectural aspects presented. And it will be just beautiful.
He says lighting would also improve safety for cyclists and pedestrians who use those bridges. Badenoch adds the LEDs would be an improvement over the existing lights on the Van Buren Street footbridge.
That bridge was never designed to be illuminated by those kinds of light fixtures. And one of the things that we've discovered in our electrical engineering is that the LED lights that we're going to be putting on the bridge will actually cost less by way of our energy bill for the city parts department. So we're going to trade out those lights that are there now, put in a more appropriate lighting, and save money for the taxpayers.
Badenoch says the light bulbs would cast a much more even light, creating far less urban light pollution than many would think. The bulk of the roughly $170,000 price tag has already been raised without taxpayer money. The last leg of the fundraising is underway and has been dubbed the Light the Way campaign.
We're opening it up to the community to let the people of Missoula who want to participate get in our Buy a Light program or sponsor a light program for $25. Like I said, most of the money has been raised. We'd like to have the last push to take this over the finish line on the fundraising be something where it's community involvement. For example, people will be able to buy a light in memory of a loved one, a veteran. Myself, I'm going to be buying a light for my goddaughter and for her brother, who is going to be a Hellgate High School graduate, and I want to honor him for his accomplishment. He's going to have a light on that bridge.
To find out more or to donate, visit lightourbridgemissoula.org.
Avoid eating clover sprouts from evergreen fresh sprouts. That's the advice from the Montana Department of Health and Human Services today. The health department joined Washington and Idaho in telling consumers to avoid sprouts from the company, which have been linked to 10 cases of E. coli. State health officials have been working to notify restaurants and groceries that purchase the sprouts and say they believe all the remaining suspect sprouts have been removed.
A member of the Glacier National Park road crew found a male grizzly bear dead on the Going to the Sun road. The initial investigation by the National Park Service indicated the bear probably fell into the road from a steep snowbank between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. A neuropathy revealed a 190-pound bear suffered head injuries, broken ribs, and internal injuries consistent with a fall. Park officials say the terrain above where the bear fell includes a steep snowbank, some steep cliffs, and a drop approximately 12 feet. Park officials notified U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, which is required because the grizzly bear is listed as an endangered species. It also informed Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. An estimated 300 grizzly bears live in Glacier National Park.
Welcome to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's Capitol reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Monk.
Well, Mike, it's no surprise that the campaign ads we're seeing now are much more pointed and critical, especially in the Senate race.
Oh, absolutely. We have Steve Daines, the Republican, John Walsh, Senator John Walsh, a Democrat, the leading candidates. You'd hardly know that they actually have primary opposition in the primary about a week and a half from now. They're just ignoring their primary opponents and just going after each other as though it's a general election. And we have new ads coming out, it seems, weekly or even more frequently than that, back and forth between these two campaigns.
Well, let's listen to an ad that Senator Walsh has out that tells a very personal story.
I'm John Walsh, and I approve this message.
I was raped when I was 14 years old. I know the pain it caused me. That's why it's so insulting that Congressman Steve Daines sponsored a bill to make abortion illegal for victims of sexual assault. He's even proposed making women criminals for having an abortion. Ultimately, I got the support I needed to live again. But if politicians like Congressman Daines have their way, other women will be left with no options at all.
And Mike, there's a very powerful message in this ad and also very stiff criticism against Congressman Daines.
Yeah, what's going on here is he's obviously wants to point out one of the main differences between himself and Congressman Daines, and that's their views on abortion. And Congressman Daines is believes that Roe versus Wade should be overturned, and he has said that he supports making abortion illegal except in cases where the mother's life is in danger. And whether that means he wants to make women criminals, I guess, is open to debate. He says not. But if abortion is illegal, you know, who's the criminal? I don't know. But at any rate, you know, it's a pretty powerful ad with a testimonial by someone who implies they had an abortion, but the campaign has not confirmed whether she did have an abortion or not, so we don't know. But that's certainly the implication. And Senator Walsh, of course, is considers himself a pro-choice candidate.
Well, Congressman Daines also has a new ad featuring a different woman with a different but also very personal story.
My ex-husband would slap me to the point where my head would ring. He locked me in bathrooms. He would lock me in closets. He would strangle me till I almost passed out. The Violence Against Women Act is a crucial turning point for domestic violence victims in this country. And Steve Daines, making the vote for the Violence Against Women Act, says that he's willing to do what it takes to do the right thing. He stands for people. He stands for women. He stands for families. I am so thankful that there's men like Steve out there that actually stand up for women's rights and what is right. He's courageous.
I'm Steve Daines, and I approve this message.
And Mike, again, a very powerful personal story and clearly, again, aiming for the women's vote.
Yes, I believe that's the backstory here, is that both campaigns realize that the women's vote is going to be crucial in this election, and that on issues like domestic violence and abortion, I mean, these are the type of issues that can sway that vote one way or another. Let's talk about what's behind this ad by the Daines campaign. He's talking about the Violence Against Women Act, which passed Congress last year, and in the House, all Democrats voted for it. About 85 or so Republicans voted for it, including Steve Daines. About 100 and some Republicans voted against it. And this bill funds a lot of programs around the country that fight domestic violence and stalkers, etc. It also should be noted that while Daines did indeed vote for this bill, he voted against the budget deal late last year that funded the programs under the Violence Against Women Act. Of course, it funded a lot of other things, too, so you really can't say that he specifically voted against the funding for that program, but he did vote against the bill that did fund the programs.
Do you think, Mike, that these ads, both the one by Senator Walsh and by Congressman Daines, are a wash in terms of the effectiveness that they might have with an independent woman voter?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer. I can't really read the minds of voters, but I think that Daines has done a very effective job of identifying voting blocks that might go Democratic or traditionally go Democratic, and to try to mute that effect. Like, he's reached out to Indian tribes. Here he's reaching out to the woman vote. So I think Daines has been very skillful in looking ahead at these groups of voters that traditionally go Democratic and trying to cut into that voting block.
Well, Chuck, in the Republican House primary, we're also seeing some ads on air, especially from Matt Rosendale, and that means he's got a lot of money to spend.
His campaign has a lot of money to spend, Sally, and most of the money is coming from Matt Rosendale. the latest FEC report, he threw in another $500,000 as a loan to his own campaign, and he'd earlier put in $500,000. So he's actually raised about $1.17 million, of which $1 million is his own money.
And he's spending it, for sure, as we said, on some ads. And then Corey Stapleton is another of the Republicans in that five-way Republican House primary, who's got some ads on air and seems to be doing pretty well in the fundraising realm as well.
Yes, and he kicked in $200,000 as a loan to his campaign, which is the first loan he's made to his campaign. So, well, the reports were filed as of the 14th, so it's coming down to the last 5 weeks from when the reports ended. And now's the time you've got to make your case to the voters. And that's what we're seeing, a lot of ads and a lot of money going into the campaign finance reports.
Well, the presumed front runner, Ryan Zinke, has a new ad, but a similar message to his other ads. But let's listen to the latest one.
I'm a third generation Montanan.
Ryan Zinke is the right conservative. Pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-energy development. The leader Montana can trust.
In the SEALs, we're taught to lead from the front and never quit until the job is done. Isn't that what we need in Washington right now?
Chuck, I doubt there's anyone who doesn't know by now that Ryan Zinke was a Navy SEAL.
This is the theme he's hit from the start of the campaign, and who knows if it'll be successful or not. He hasn't really talked much about issues in the ad as much as he's talked about being a SEAL, although in this ad he does say that he's pro-life, pro-gun, and the like.
Pro-energy.
Pro-energy. It happens at the same time as he's being hit hard by a couple of former Republican State Party chairs. One of them is Rick Hill, former congressman. One is Ken Miller, a former state senator. The other is John Brennan, a current state senator. They're particularly Hill and Miller, through social media and email, are really just hammering the heck out of Zinke. And to date, he hasn't responded. He's said throughout the campaign that he is following Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, which is "Thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican." And he hasn't. And we'll see if that works or not.
Well, Mike, the other big political headline this week was the filing of a lawsuit to overturn Montana's ban on same-sex marriage. And Governor Steve Bullock and the state Democratic Party were quick to come out in support of overturning that ban. House Democratic candidate John Lewis also, but the other political candidates have been pretty silent about this.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing much of anything from the Republican candidates, or for that matter, from Senator John Walsh, the Democrat. He may have sent something out. I just haven't seen it, or like I said, don't recall it. I also think this is quite the contrast from 10 years ago when this thing was on the ballot, the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, when I'd say most Democrats, if not all Democrats, running for statewide office were supporting the ban or not denouncing it. It shows you how much the dynamic on that issue has changed just in 10 short years.
And I think it's just as telling that many of the Republican congressional candidates have not come out and said, oh, no, no, you shouldn't overturn the ban. They may yet, but they haven't yet.
Not really. Like I said, the silence from that side has been remarkable.
Well, Chuck, push is coming to shove in the primary campaign season, but I'm still getting people asking me who is so-and-so and what do they stand for. And I think it's just a fact, isn't it, that voters just don't get very excited about primary elections, especially in an off-presidential year.
That's definitely the case. And particularly in primaries where you have a number of candidates running, like the House Republican primary, five candidates, four of them have served in the state legislature, but I suspect most of them weren't well-known outside of their legislative districts going into the campaign, and of course that's why they're advertising some way more than others. But primary turnouts are usually much lower than general election turnouts, and I think this will be no different. The Senate race is definitely the driver in this primary. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, we'll keep paying attention, and we'll meet again next week to talk about it on the eve of the primary. Chuck and Mike, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mauch. We hope you'll join us next week for another discussion of the week's political news.
And in tonight's forecast, in Helena, the current temperature is 79 degrees. In Missoula, it's 84. In Butte, it's 82. In Dillon, it's 77 degrees. In Hamilton, it's 88 degrees. And in Kalispell, it is 81 degrees. West of the Divide tonight, you can expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers. Low should be in the 40s. Saturday, expect mostly cloudy skies again with a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. High should be in the upper 60s to mid 70s. On Sunday, look for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain showers in the afternoon and evening. Highs in the 70s. In central Montana tonight, there'll be increasing clouds with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the evening and a slight chance of rain showers through the night. Low should be 45 to 55. On Saturday, should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers through the day. There's a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs 65 to 75. On Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of rain showers, and highs from 70 to 80 degrees. In southwest Montana tonight, you can expect increasing clouds, a slight chance of thunderstorms in the evening, and a slight chance of rain showers through the night, with lows 40 to 50 degrees. On Saturday, look for mostly cloudy skies, with rain showers likely through the day. There's a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Highs should be 65 to 75 degrees. On Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, with highs from 65 to 75 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Terry Kendrick.
Now, I am as disengaged from our political system as I have ever been. It all started with the Supreme Court's decision in favor of Citizens United that determined money is the same as speech. Given the amount of money I have, let's say I'm nearly speechless, and I have it way better than a lot of people. The increasing role of big money in politics has left me disillusioned and cynical. A recent news story about a study conducted by Princeton and Northwestern University analyzing whether our elected officials represent individuals, special interest advocacy groups, or the wealthiest class just added fuel to the flame. The researchers looked at more than 1,900 pieces of legislation from 1981 through 2002 and came to the conclusion that the United States is no longer a democracy. It's becoming something else. The authors call it economic elite domination. Here's a quote from this study. The central point that emerges from our research is that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while mass-based interest groups and average citizens have little or no independent influence, end quote. Additionally, the researchers found that when the majority of citizens disagree with economic elites or with their organized interests, the majority of citizens come out on the losing end of the stick. Even when large majorities of citizens favor a policy change, they generally don't get it if there is strong opposition from the economic elite. We don't have to look that far back in history to see a prime example. The American people supported stronger sanctions for the big banks that caused the financial collapse a few years ago, and yet banks and their CEOs got off relatively unscathed and ultimately became bigger and richer. This is not to say that lower-income and middle-income people never get their way. They get their way when the views are in sync with the economic elite. Policy initiatives that are not actively opposed by the wealthy are okay. The study shows that when economic elites support a given policy change, it has an almost 50% chance of being enacted. The people we elect are going to vote in line with the views of the wealthiest approximately one out of two times. When the elites oppose a policy, its chance of being passed are less than one in five. Journalists reporting on this study have raised the question of whether the United States is becoming an oligarchy. In fact, the good senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, asked Janet Yellen, the chair of the Federal Reserve, if that's what she thought was happening. Ms. Yellen said, and I quote, "There's no question that we've had a trend toward growing inequality, and I personally find it a very worrisome trend that deserves the attention of policymakers," end quote. The policymakers who are beholden to the wealthiest should address the concentration of power in the hands of the wealthy. It seems a little like asking the fox to guard the hen house. Yellen also stated that this growing trend of inequality can determine the ability of different groups to participate in our democracy, and this will ultimately have a negative impact on society. To use another colloquialism, Ms. Yellen, I believe that train has left the station. Senator Sanders went on in his remarks to say that the top 1% in this country own close to 40% of the financial wealth. The bottom 60% owns just over 2%. The Waltons, the owners of Walmart, not characters from the TV show, are collectively worth more than $140 billion, more than the bottom 40% of Americans combined. That's just one family. In another famous family, the Koch brothers, their wealth increased by $12 billion just last year. Sanders raised the critical question, have we reached a point where the billionaire class has so much political power that we can no longer reverse the trend? If we're not at the tipping point, we soon will be. This doesn't mean that we should quit signing petitions, talking to elected officials about our policy needs, and casting our vote. It does mean that we have to focus much more of our advocacy on overturning the Citizens United decision and putting increased pressure on policymakers to address the imbalance of power. Our democracy didn't start out perfect. It was structured to benefit wealthy white men. Just think of who was first given the right to vote. But through the advocacy of ordinary people, things got better. More people became enfranchised. We are at another crossroads in this country where we must once again address the fundamental issue of inequality in our system. Otherwise, we'll be left with the Orwellian result that the economic elites are a lot more equal than everybody else. This is Terry Kendrick. Thanks for listening.
Terry Kendrick is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cades-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.